Hi, friends, and welcome back to Chronically Ill but Chronically Fabulous. I'm your host, Haley, and thanks for coming back for episode two. We have some exciting stuff we're going to talk about today, and we have our first guest. I was going to try to do that as soon as possible early into the podcast, and I just so happen to have the right kind of people in my life that I can just kind of be like, hey, would you like to be on my podcast? And of course, you're like, yes, we would love to, Haley. So I have brought in a close friend, a friend from college, and still we're pretty good friends, my friend John. So today, if you didn't see the Instagram post, I asked, you know, what do you think we'll be talking about in episode two? And the big hint was the red ribbon. If you don't know what the red ribbon is, well, I'm glad you're here for this episode because my friend John and I are going to talk about it. So I do want to introduce John. So John, go ahead and say hello to our lovely podcast friends.
Hey, y'all. Enjoy. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
So first and foremost, I just kind of want to say how I know John and how we know each other. We met back in, what, 2014, 2015?
Somewhere like that. Let's just go with it.
Somewhere in that arena in college. We were both studying public health, and we kind of, as we went further into our program, we had similar classes and kind of decided, hey, we should probably just be friends because, you know, we get along pretty well. And John would have, like, the backpack full of, like, mom snacks. So everybody knew to sit next to John during lecture because he had, like, the peanut butter, what, pretzels?
Yeah, the pretzels that have the peanut butter stuffed in them.
Yeah, those are the best.
Always had chocolate and...
If you were hungry, he would make sure you were fed and weren't starving during lecture.
It was the quintessential mom bag. I even had, like... Tylenol, Aleve, Motrin, Imodium AD, Pepto-Bismol. Like, if anybody said, oh, John, I need a Benadryl, hold, please. And there's a bottle of Benadryl in front of you.
So he was like our walking convenience store, if you will.
Basically.
So, but no, John and I had some classes together, and we actually had a class together on a specific topic. Didn't we have the same class
with Dr. Foote? Mm-hmm. We were in that class together. Yeah.
So it was kind of neat and how it's kind of all unfolded now and come full circle. So today, John, I will let you reveal what our topic is today since I did not reveal on social media because I wanted to keep it a secret and be a surprise.
Gotta love surprises.
Yeah.
So today, since I'm the guest, we're going to be talking about HIV. I'm a person who lives with HIV every day. Which is a chronic disease now.
It is.
Yay, chronic! Because we're fabulous.
So, and like I said on my, I believe I said on my pilot episode, and of course episode one, anybody I do have or invite on the podcast to speak about their illness, of course, you know.
Yeah, it's lived experience. It's not professional opinion. It's not, there's no money coming
in. Right. And this is 100% voluntarily talking. Of course, if John didn't want to talk about HIV, he'd been like, no, Haley, I don't want to be on your podcast.
Right.
I would have been like, okay, that's totally fine. On to the next person.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm pretty vocal and open about it. So it doesn't really bother me to sit and talk about HIV and living with it and all the fun things that come along with it.
Right. So I think probably for those, because I'm sure that there are people out there who don't completely understand what HIV is. So can you, from your kind of definition of what HIV is?
So HIV, human, oh God.
Immunodeficiency
virus.
Help you out there.
Help me out, Haley.
So the class that we took together in college was actually called, well, one of the classes we took together was called AIDS in Society.
Yeah.
Taught by Dr. Foote.
Yeah, and the whole preface of the class is to show the social construction of HIV and AIDS as an illness instead of the medical side of it. It's the social side of it. because it's a sociology class, of course, right. Which was really awesome to learn about how it went from, you know, in the early days, it was GRID, which is gay-related, immune disease, I think, or deficiency.
I couldn't tell you.
I can't remember. And then, you know, it morphed into HIV and AIDS and all this fun stuff. So yeah, that's how we started palling around.
Yeah. So back to your definition. So like what exactly is HIV, John?
So HIV is a retrovirus. I'm using big terms. Let's just cut it to the quick and dirty and simple.
Sure.
HIV is a virus. As you know, sometimes our body clears viruses, other times our body doesn't. And this being a virus that our body doesn't clear, because what it does is the HIV virus goes into our white blood cells. Most likely it's our CD4s, helper T cells, helper cells. It invades the cell and the nucleus and re-transcripts its DNA, its genetic code. And then inside of it, it just keeps replicating HIV little babies, and then the T cell explodes, releasing all these little HIV babies, and they just keep going on and on and on.
Gotcha.
So that's the easy way to
explain it. The easy way
to explain it without having a visual chart to like
right,
point.
Like here, this you picture, know, this slide.
You know, visual aids are so much better. But that's the best verbal visual aid.
But I think
give.
That was a good explanation. I mean, I could follow along with it.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, if people really want to know, they can probably Google it.
Oh, there's there's some beautiful graphics out there. You know, some beautiful graphics of what it actually does step by step.
Right.
So anyway.
Kind of like talking to maybe the average person who might not know that much about HIV. So, because we can, both of us can say that assumptions are made HIV,
yes,
and people who acquire HIV. What are some different ways people can actually get HIV? Because I know that there's way more than one.
There's more than one. Of course, we all know sex,
right,
without a condom,
protected,
with someone who is positive, has a viral load themselves. We know that. We also know injection drug use, dirty needles. We know that transmits. And then you've got mother to child transmission. We call that vertical transmission. That just means HIV positive mother who isn't on treatment has a large percentage of passing it on to the child. And it's not in utero, it's at birth.
So you have to cross that blood barrier.
Yes, the blood
during
barrier.
Birth,
yes,
in order for the child to receive.
Yes.
Gotcha, that makes
because,
sense.
Because of the way everything, I guess, works in the embryo and the...
You're protected in a sac, essentially, when you're in utero.
Even though you're sharing blood, the mother is the main blood supply,
mm-hmm,
it just doesn't get into the fetus that way. It's usually up on birth, vaginal birth, I should say, C-section.
That's a good,
because C-section they can
bypass all of that,
bypass a lot of it. So the vaginal birthing, I should say, those are your three main.
And now there used to be another one, but they've kind of,
well, occupational. It's an occupational hazard was one of them. Another one, and that's nurses, EMTs, police officers, first responders, things like that. They're at an occupational risk.
Right. And then I remember something else that we learned that doesn't happen because, of course, blood has to be screened,
yeah,
when transfusions.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see that happening now that we've kind of gotten smart about that.
Once they started testing the blood supply in the mid to late 80s, that's when you really didn't see it in blood transfusions anymore, because of that reason.
Is that more so because of, for example, like Ryan White in that incident per se?
Kinda. So the blood supply that we have is, as we all know, in great demand at all given points in time. So it's easier to screen the blood for HIV and discard blood that has HIV in it, yes, it's a loss of blood, but you're protecting the greater population overall.
Right.
So that's the whole theory behind it. And okay. A lot of people, actually, that's how some people find out that they're HIV positive, is they go in to donate blood.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
Yep, they test the blood then to make sure. And they also test it for a few other things, you know. What do they test for? Hepatitis C primarily, and if you test positive for Hep C, that's also blood that's destroyed. And you're put in a national database so that if you go state to state, wherever, they can pull it up and see that, nope, you can't give blood anymore.
Right.
So, but yeah, those are the basics. I mean, yes, we all know from the 80s, we've seen most people have seen Philadelphia, Tom mm-hmm. Hanks. That's what AIDS looked like, or HIV stage 3, as we're now calling it.
Right.
Or end-stage HIV.
And I know there's a lot of terminology kind of willy-nilly thrown around. I've seen it, you've seen it, I'm sure a good number of people out in, you know, the internet land have yes. seen it, when people refer to HIV as AIDS, but in actuality, they're not one and the same.
They are not one and the same. Actually, they're complete opposites of one another. HIV, untreated, causes AIDS. Technically, AIDS doesn't exist. AIDS is not a virus. AIDS is not anything but a diagnosis. And the CDC defines AIDS as a CD4 count of 200 or below. That gives you... opens up you to a lot of opportunistic infections.
Mm-hmm.
Pneumocystis pneumonia, Kaposi's sarcoma, which is a form of cancer. Mm-hmm. Toxoplasmosis, things of this nature.
You're pretty much like immunocompromised, so you're open and vulnerable for pretty much anything. So
technically AIDS is nothing but a diagnosis. It's not even a virus. And that's what a lot of people don't really understand about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a CDC defined point in time. So you can be diagnosed HIV positive, or you can be diagnosed, have an AIDS diagnosis when you first find out. And a lot of people back in the day, you had an AIDS diagnosis, you were a goner. You had an HIV positive diagnosis, it was a, you know, shot in the long shot, in the dark. But now, we've learned that a person can float in and out of an AIDS diagnosis.
Hmm.
And it's all because of your CD4, your T helper cells. You get it above 200, you no longer CDC defined have AIDS as an illness, because your CD4 is above 200. Your CD4 falls below 200, you have AIDS again. So,
oh, wow.
So it's all based on your immune system, your CD4s, which is in your blood work, one of the most important numbers you need to know. That and viral load. Those are your two numbers that you live by as someone living with HIV. Let's see, I was diagnosed, I'm coming up on my fourth year being positive. Fourth.
See, I didn't know you I don't believe I knew you when that happened.
You didn't know me pre-HIV, you met me post-HIV.
But I don't think it was very far after the fact.
No, it wasn't when we met. When we started Dr. Foote's class, I literally walked in her office and said, been diagnosed HIV positive for less than 6 months, so I'm taking your class. She said, okay.
Nice.
it was interesting. But yeah, your numbers, when they first tell you your numbers, those are numbers that stay with you.
Yeah.
No matter what. My viral load was 41,700, and my CD4 was 323. 4 years later, those are numbers that I will never forget.
Right.
And it's just because those numbers are the ones that are like, okay, this is real.
So what was your initial reaction? I mean, because I know that you knew, you were knowledgeable about, you know, like, HIV. So was it as big of a shock to you?
No.
I was going to say.
And I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's just the circumstance behind it. Actually, no. I took my first HIV test when I was 19.
Uh-huh.
And I drove 3 counties away from where I lived to have it done, which was about an hour and a half away, to have my first HIV test. I was 19, and it was on a Friday. I had to wait 72 hours for the results at 19. I didn't find out until Monday. The following Monday. So, I had to go a weekend, like, on pins and needles.
So, back, you know, prior, this is your younger years, when you first were, you know, you had more of a, there was a more shock value then than there was now.
Oh, yeah.
Because now, you know, you're in your
30s. Oh, yeah.
You know, so you've kind of, you've had that time to educate yourself.
Educate myself, grow.
Meet other people.
Other people who are positive. Yeah. And it was just, I was like, okay. And I kind of said, okay, so when are we going to get me on medication?
Right.
Like, that was, there was no, oh my gosh, my life is over. I was like, okay, so when do I go on meds? What right. med am I going on? Because being public health like we are, I just wanted to know what I was taking so I could figure out what I was taking so I could look it up, you know.
Because, you know, for those who don't know, prevention is much cheaper than treatment.
Yes.
And not just HIV, but any Everything. Type of health initiative.
Yeah. That's actually, that's the first thing. Public health, that's the first thing you learn when you, no matter what public health class you're in, your first one.
Mm-hmm.
It's treatment is, or no, prevention is cheaper than treatment.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Yeah, to prevent the disease or the illness is cheaper than to actually treat it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've already, you know, told my podcast listeners that I live in Indianapolis, that I'm a Hoosier through and through. I've born and raised Indiana. John is not from Indiana, if you could not tell by his accent.
No, I'm from the South. So it's kind of fun back home. Not really.
I was going to say probably a different world when you're talking about things like HIV, you know, diseases that have such, they're stigmatized pretty highly in certain different areas in the country.
Yeah. When I was younger, there was rumor about a guy in town, and that was it. It was rumor, and no one, like, he would walk in the grocery store and people would clear aisles. And this was, you know, 2009, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, when I started paying attention to rumor.
Yeah.
Rumor around town, you know, small town mentality.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And it was then that I was like, oh, this is real. Oh, this is scary. Oh, I never want this to happen to me.
Based on the reactions of the general public in which you grew up.
Yeah, in association with this gentleman, who I don't even know if he was positive. Have no clue. But that was the around town assumption and rumor. Again, small town rumor mill. So, growing up in that, and then coming out, that was pretty heavy,
being
where I'm from. And then I left. I left at 18, 19, somewhere in that range. And it's been interesting, you know. It's not something that I would go back home and announce, even today,
mm-hmm.
with everything, the technology, the medication. I don't even think. No, I wouldn't.
It's just still a closeted subject. Oh, God.
So closeted.
Especially where you're from. And,
Especially where I'm from. But, you know, living here in Indy, it's nothing, you know.
Right. Everybody's pretty. There's a bigger community of people that either are living with HIV or who
are allies
or educated or who, you know, take part in organizations to help promote education to prevent HIV.
Yep. Or they give services to people living with HIV.
There you go.
You know, so it's a different culture up here, but you still find sometimes that small town mentality, even in
Indianapolis,
you know. But for me, I don't see myself as, you know, someone who has HIV.
Right.
You know, I work full time. I go to school full time. I volunteer for four different organizations. I'm a prominent member in the community. People know who I am. I don't see myself as that. Yeah, it's there. Yeah, it's part of who I am, but it's not the most important part of who I am.
Right.
It's actually the least important part of who I am. But, however, I can say that getting my diagnosis opened up a plethora of opportunities for me. Professionally, educationally, socially. And it's odd because, you know, I say that even here in Indiana, in Indianapolis, you get some of that small town mentality from people. And it's not, it's a little bit of a different small town mentality. You know, you'll get a crack out of this. But pre-John HIV, never took care of himself, never went to the doctor. Like, I had to be on death's door before I would even think about going to the doctor. And when I mean death's door, I mean, the time that my eardrum ruptured or perforated and there was, like, gunk and blood running out of my ear, and I was still like, no, I don't need to go to the doctor. I'll be fine.
Oh my gosh.
Or the time that my entire throat and mouth and tongue, even the insides of my lips, were white with strep throat, and I was like, oh, I'm just running a fever of 103. I'll just take some Tylenol and burn it off.
No big deal.
No big deal. You know, that was John pre-HIV. John post-HIV, post-diagnosis, whatever. I actually go to the doctor now. One, because HIV forces me to. And two, it just, you know, it's a little bit nicer. Now, you know, I'm also getting older. So I kind of need to go to the doctor more often. But it's put me in, you know, better physical medical health, I should say. I actually went to the doctor on Monday. I've lost a few pounds because I'm a little bit of a chunky boy. And all of my lab results were normal range, you know. So, you know, there's nothing, virus can't be detected in my body.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is, you know, I'm sure there's assumptions made that, oh, if you have HIV, you must be, like, in such crappy health. When actuality is, if you, you know, are taking the medications that your doctor's given you, if you're taking care of yourself, obviously not doing things you're not supposed to be doing as far as, like, other risky behaviors that could increase other incidence of disease or whatever.
Right.
I mean, you can live a full life.
Yeah,
surpass people who don't have HIV.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're on your medications.
As long as you take your medication and go to the doctor. So, and this is what we're running into now in the larger community of HIV. More people are living longer. So, here's the thing. There's never been HIV positive people living until their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. You would get it and then you were gone in the early days. Now, you got people living to the 50s, 60s, 70s. You know, we're some people in their 80s. And it's how do we care for people now as we're aging because everything else is getting better? And no one knows. That's the thing right now. No one knows how HIV and aging are working. Because the immune system naturally, as you get older, naturally declines. So how are we going to offset that with a virus that causes your immune system to decline? So it's something that's really, like, I should say, something that's of interest in the community of how are we going to start caring for people as we're aging past our expected living points, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something that's interesting that's we're starting to notice. But you can live a normal life. You can lead a normal life. You can do everything else that you want to do in life. I mean, nothing really stops me from doing whatever I want, whenever I want, you know?
Right.
Okay, so I have a virus. Okay, I take one pill every day. Just like if someone is diabetic, they check their sugar, they take their pill. Just if someone has heart disease, they monitor their heart, mm-hmm. they take their heart pill. You got high blood pressure, you monitor your blood pressure, you take your pill.
And then you move on with your day.
And you just move on with your day. So I don't think of HIV as an infectious disease or a deadly virus anymore because we have the technology of treatment, you know. So it's almost like I have a chronic illness. Something which I live with every day.
The symptoms of HIV are chronic.
They are.
So it does fall under the category of chronic disease and illness.
Yep.
I double checked that too, you know, of course, before I had John speak, just in case, you know, I don't want somebody to be like, oh my gosh, it's so misleading. No, it's not. It's there.
It's there.
So I remember this pretty vividly, not 100% vividly. Back when we took the AIDS and Society class together, John would always usually give me a ride to my car because I would have to park in the parking garage at nighttime after dark, which sometimes, you know, on the campus we were at,
it
got a little creepy. You had some people kind of wandering around. But, you know, he would take me to my car so then I could go home.
I didn't want her to walk by herself.
Yeah, you know, little me, somebody snatched me up, it'd be the end of it.
You know, the nice southern boy in me came out.
Yeah. And I remember, I think we were walking outside. We were in the campus center. We walked outside. And you said something to me. And I kind of like
did a double take.
I did a double take. I was like, wait a minute, what did he just say? you pretty much disclosed to me that you found out you were positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, that's okay. And then like kind of la-di-da-di-da, like the rest of the night went on. But it was just like, I don't have a lot of friends. You're my only friend that I know of.
Right.
Here, that is HIV positive and willing to even talk about it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that, well, I can't say you're my only. I know other people too. We both do. You know, and you have
a bond.
So, you know, I'm like, you know, I wonder, you know, somebody like John, he's pretty open about his, you know, diagnosis and open to talk about it and educate. And I'm like, what about if it was just somebody who needed somebody to confide in? And I was like, yeah, I just found out, like, it's a kind of a big deal when somebody kind of is like, hey, you know, I'm HIV positive.
Yeah. Well, what you didn't know is I disclosed to our whole class and it was very, like, under the table. Dr. Foote caught it and Tim caught it. They caught it when I completely disclosed to the entire class, but no one in class got it. It was at one of the discussions. I raised my hand and I said, those of us living with HIV. And not people.
I can see how that would go over everybody's head.
Right. So I literally was able to disclose to a room of, what, almost 40 people?
We were pretty packed in a little room.
We were sardined.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Like, I was able to, like, come out, so to speak, in front of almost, like, 40 people. And no one got it.
See, and I... Obviously, I didn't because it just went...
Right.
I just remembered when it was just me and you. And you... told me in the process of walking to a car, you know, like, we weren't sitting at a cafe anywhere, like, all intimate-like, and just, no. We were just, like, literally walking to the car.
We were walking, like, to the car because we both wanted to get home.
Yeah.
We were tired.
We were tired, and, but I was just, like, and I thought about that later, and I'm, like, that's kind of a big deal. And, of course, I was, like, I'm not going to say anything to anybody because I don't want to, like, say anything outside of my boundaries because it's not my decision to tell everybody.
Right.
So yeah, I thought that was, I was like, oh my gosh, I wonder if John remembers that because, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I live positive, you know, I live openly HIV positive. Most people in my life know that I'm HIV positive, you know, there's a section of my life that I'm keeping in the dark. AKA all of my family
in the South. Okay, understandable.
You know, like, but everyone else in my life, I don't hide it. You know, it's not something that I hide, you know, because it's part of me. Granted, you know, it's not the everything.
Right.
You know, but I've built my educational career and my professional career in HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And being open about my own status has probably, honestly, that's what has given me the education and the professional that I've, the successes that I've had.
Yeah.
It's because I'm so open about it. You can't use it against me. Like, it's already out there, right. You know. it was published in a, my status was published in a, I gave consent. Don't take this the wrong way. My status was published in a magazine that goes worldwide. You know, so if somebody finds that issue, there's my name, positive since 2015. So yeah, I'm on year four. I mean, it's there. It's mm-hmm. in print. It's in publication. It's on the, you know, publication and when you find it digitally. So...
Can't hide from it now.
Can't hide ever. From it now, ever.
Yeah.
But I don't think of it as... I don't think of me as, you know, having this and it just, you know...
You don't let it get to the point where it's debilitating you mentally.
No.
You know.
I control it. It does not control
there
me.
There you go.
And that's the way I have to live mm-hmm. with it. Yes, I do make jokes. You know, occasionally, Haley will tell me, be careful or don't do this, don't do that. And I'll just come off with, something's got to kill me before HIV does, Haley. And
we have some dark humor, but I feel like when you live with chronic disease, it doesn't even matter what kind of chronic disease you have.
No.
You have to have some sort of mortality sense of humor. Otherwise,
it will get to you.
Yeah, it'll eat you alive.
You know, and the first time I said it, I can still remember the look on your face. You were like, John! I was like... Well, it's true. I need something else to kill me before it does because I don't want to be a HIV statistical death.
See, and now I'm just like, hey, John, don't do that. And I'm like, never mind because I already know what he's going to say.
Yeah.
I'm like, forget it.
Yeah. Or if I'm down, you know, somebody will say, oh, John, be positive. And then I turn around and I'm like, I'm always positive.
That's hilarious.
And some people, it goes over their head.
Yeah.
Some people, they're like, haha, very funny.
Slapstick humor at its finest.
Right. But, you know. But you're right. You have to have some type of this weird humor with chronic disease. Doesn't matter what chronic disease it is.
Right.
Because living with a chronic disease, your body is under more pressure, which means that's more stress, that's more aging, that ages quicker. So you know that there's a clock, and it's ticking a little bit faster than everybody else's.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, you know what? I'm just going to go with it and make the jokes.
Yep. Obviously not everybody might have the same sense of humor in the beginning, but I feel like it's something that you just don't create. It's something you have to learn over time on, okay, like, can I get away with saying this? You know, I can be like, ha ha, that was, you know, some friends might not get it, but.
And some people have to sit in it. Some people get diagnosed and they have to sit in that diagnosis in their head for a while. Some people 10, 15 years down the road still haven't accepted it. You know, they go to the doctor, they take the medication, but they still haven't accepted the diagnosis that this is what they have. And it's really sad because you're just kind of, you're truncating yourself. You're cutting yourself off. I get it. Trust me, I get how hard it is to try to date.
Oh yeah,
you know,
that's an interesting topic.
Well, dating in general, and then dating living with a chronic disease such as HIV, is just adds another layer.
It should be its own TV show, its own like Netflix series. I feel like
that would be. I'd watch it.
Oh, I would totally watch it too.
But you know, you've got people who've completely cut their lives off. They've stopped their life. I can't do anything else. My life is over. And I'm like, no, your life isn't over. You know, some people are like, well, that part of my life is dead when it comes to like a relationship. And I'm like, no, your life isn't over. But again, some people, that's their way of controlling. Themselves, controlling everything. Me, I'm like, you know, here it is. This is it, you know.
What you see is what you get.
Right, and if you don't and like some. It, if you don't like it, there's the door.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I took my diagnosis, which could have put me in a bad place. If I would have,
oh yeah,
if I would have not been in the headspace that I was in when I got diagnosed, I probably would have went down the rabbit hole like a lot of people do. But I didn't. I said, okay, well, this is life now. So, all right. What do I have to do to stay alive? Okay, I take my meds, I go to the doctor. Okay, now let's do something about this. Let's take this and make something out of it. And that's what I've done. Which is kind of different than some people. Some people, again, hide it. Some people aren't. There are people who are more vocal about it than I am, you know.
Which is hard to believe if you know John.
Yes, because I've got a pretty big mouth. But no, I know people from other states because I do a lot of advocacy work too. I mean, they are just loud and proud about it, and when I say proud, I don't mean it in the way that most people would take the word proud. It's, you know, it's a sense of, you know, yes, I have this, but I'm still a person. You know, I'm still a human being. I'm proud to be alive because I've done what my doctors have said. You know, long-term survivors, and we classify a long-term survivor 15 years or more. Long-term survivors are proud because they've lived through it. They lived through the 80s epidemic, when there were funerals every couple of days. You would see somebody a month later, you're seeing them again and they're in a casket. They went through the AZT years of where the medications were so toxic, most people would rather not take them and risk dying of an AIDS-related illness versus taking the medication that was toxic, causing liver failure, kidney failure, bone density to where you just spindled up and then wasting. It was a risk, you know? And now we've got people who've been survivors 30 years now. Mm-hmm. 34, we're going on 35, 36 years. We've got people who've lived the biggest chunk of their life with HIV, and they're still going strong, and they're proud about it. They're like, hey, I lived through the bad time. I made it through the years that we didn't know if we were going to make it. They made it. It inspires me, because if they can make it through those years, please.
It's easy.
It's cake for me at this point. And I use my status to advocate for, you know, treatment,
mm-hmm.
prevention, different campaigns about treatment, different campaigns about prevention methods, different, you know, all of these things. I'm open about it. Am I boastful about my status? No, I don't boast about it. I'm honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm proud of myself for not succumbing to the black rabbit hole that I could have went down. I'm proud of myself of taking a diagnosis like this and building something out of it, an educational career, a professional career, to where I can give back, I can help people more. And that's not something everyone can do with a diagnosis like this.
Right.
Just, you know, if you take cancer, for example, another disease that's heavily impacted, heavily stigmatized,
mm-hmm.
not everyone can build a platform on it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So you have to look at it as, what can I give to the cause of whatever disease I have? I have education. I'm fortunate to be granted education. I have, you know, a profession to where I can talk about my status. I can help other people with their status. I can empower other positive people to whatever, you know, change something about themselves, learn something new. Come, you know, this, you know, a minuscule amount out of their shell. And so that's why I do what I do. That's why I'm so open about my status. But it has its downfall, I'll be honest.
So what are some of the, because, you know, as we said earlier, HIV is a chronic illness disease. So what are some of the more prominent kind of chronic symptoms that you've had, that you've encountered on this journey, obviously, thus far?
So for me, it's just, I'm all the time tired, no matter what. Haley has seen, you know, we've been around each other enough. Haley knows if I've had 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep. Haley also knows when I've been pulling an all-nighter, because that's what you do in college. But always feeling tired, never feeling 100% rested, no matter how much sleep I get.
Or how much coffee you drink.
I've had six cups of coffee today. Six. And I could tell you right now, this morning, after the sixth cup, I could have come back home, crawled in the bed, and went right to sleep. That's just how it is, you know. Of course, there's, you know, the weight gain with meds. You know, certain medications cause you to retain fat. So that's a, you know, and again, there's more weight on your body, more weight on your joints.
Yeah, so ain't that the truth?
There's the wear and tear of weight on your body. And then there's, I mean, I don't, for me, it's, those are the big ones. For me, is just the tiredness, the fatigue, brain fog. I get brain fog a lot.
I second that. My gosh.
I can be in mid-conversation at work and have to walk away and say, I'll be back. I don't remember what I'm talking about. Which is bad. But
it happens.
It happens. It's not something that is a common occurrence. Just when it happens, it happens. You know, I've looked at some of the symptoms and of aging with HIV. It could go as far as, you know, I've had neuropathies aren't in my hands and in my feet. It's progression of the disease. And then, you know, the one that everyone worries about is, you know, it's called AIDS-related dementia. but it's just a side effect of the virus and all the medications, especially the older medications, cause a lot of things to go on inside the body. And so a lot of your long-term survivors are having what's classed as AIDS-related dementia. From not being diagnosed until they have AIDS. and then the fight with the medicine and everything like that. Which is something I may not ever have to deal with because of the technology of the medication that we have, the medical technology. So, yeah, for me, it's just, you know, it's the fatigue, the tiredness, and the weight gain, you know. There could be other symptoms that come about later in life. Again, I've just discussed those. They could never come around. It's kind of like a mixed bag. You just reach in.
It's kind of like my disease. Not everybody's the same.
Not everybody's
symptoms
the same.
Vary and... Mm-hmm. You know, it can hit you at different points in your life, really.
Yeah. I mean, I could wake up I could go to bed tonight and then have neuropathy pain. You know, my arms fall asleep, my legs fall asleep. That could happen tonight when I go to bed. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. It could. Or it could just be a one-off shoot of I slept the wrong way and it feels funny. Or it could happen sequentially and then that's when I'm like, okay. Hey, Doc.
Right.
So
what would you say if any of our listeners, followers, etc. out there were like, well, I want to know, maybe they want to know more information, but they're not ready to talk to somebody else about it. What are some good, like, resources online?
Oh, well, gosh. There's...
Like, the maybe two or three big ones that kind of stand out to you.
Big ones. Of course, the CDC, you know, they're, you know, and WHO, but WHO is more for the global side of HIV. If you want to just learn more about the basics, CDC, there's this really good group. It's called AVERT, AVERT. They put out a lot of good consumer-friendly information. And when I say consumer friendly, I mean it's, and I'm not saying this to make any implication to our listeners, but it's for the lay public. So it doesn't use the larger technical terms that this sometimes you will see. It'll use more lay language or non-clinical language, non-scientific, non-research language. That's kind of what that is.
Kind of breaks it down for you.
Yeah, it breaks it down to where it's easier to understand. And then There's POZ.com, POZ.com. They're a plethora of information, honestly. And they're connected with TheBody.com, which is another good resource. Those are the top ones that I would say. Go to your Google, you know, AIDS service organizations near me. They're called ASOs. We call them ASOs. Google one of those. There's usually a plethora of information at those places on testing, on diagnosis, on treatment. If you have a local STD clinic, which I hate to even say that, but, you know, they're out there. They have plenty of information. Again, we like to say prevention is easier and cheaper than treatment. Here's my thing to all the listeners. I don't care, you know, who you have sex, how you have sex, and everything like that. It doesn't matter to me. But get tested. You know, it's one of those things that can make the biggest difference in your life. And, you know, okay, your test comes back positive. Okay. You may personally have to process it for a while, and I understand that. But there's people out there that are more than willing to lend a shoulder. You'll find those people. And when you do, those are the people that you really are like, okay, I can be more the okay with this diagnosis. It could take some time, because you have to first accept it yourself before you can seek out others. But it's nothing to hide from. It's nothing to panic about. It's nothing to, like, you know, okay, so you have to be on a pill the rest of your life.
That's kind of better off than most of our country when we're so heavily medicated.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one pill is, it's not the end of the world.
No.
So to speak.
It's not the end of the world. It's funny, when I got diagnosed, I was talking to someone who works at an ASO, and he said, so are able to fill your prescription and get your first fill of your medication, 2 weeks before, because of the way our labs and doctor's appointments and everything get set up, it's a process. He said, before you see the doctor, because that's when you get your script, so in between labs and the doctor's about 2 weeks. He's like, so you did your labs, yeah. Well, before your doctor's appointment, go get a bottle of multivitamins. And I said, why? He said, get in the habit of taking a pill every day. It takes 14 days, he said, this is his words, it takes 14 days to start a habit and enforce a habit and to reinforce it. And I said, okay. Just kind of joking around. It worked. Like, I got used to taking my vitamin every day. And then I just, you know, when I got my script, I started feeling, and it was every day. So, you learn little things mm-hmm. like that. And it's kind of like, oh, well, this does work in this way. Okay, cool, you know. But no, it's not the end of the world. You can live a full life. Hell, friend with a woman in California, she's on the beach, she's learning how to surf and windsurf and wakeboard and going on skiing expeditions. It's like nothing can, you know, you can have a completely normal life, so don't be afraid of it.
So, and I guess, because we spent we actually filled up a good amount of time on this episode. I guess maybe one of the last things that might be good for some people to know, or what is something that living with HIV has taught you on this 4-year journey that you're is there a particular word, or
there's been a lot of lessons mm-hmm. But over the 4 years, I've learned more about who I am. And it's all like more of that internal stuff. I'm more comfortable with my body. I'm more comfortable when seeking a partner, whether it be for a relationship, for it be just sex, nothing else, whatever. I'm more comfortable because, and you know, in today's terms, I'm that authentic me. Well, I didn't know what that authentic me was 4 years ago, and it started to roll around with my diagnosis. I was like, well, you know, might as well not hide anything, you know, might as well be as transparent and honest about things as possible. And here I am 4 years later, and I mean, yeah, it's a roller coaster, but you can have some fun.
Some life lessons along the way,
right? Learn a few things, cross a few, dot a few I's, cross a few T's, you know.
Well, that's thank you for sharing, because I know that, I mean, for you it's nothing,
right?
But for anybody else living with HIV, it could be, you know, a matter of like anxiety attacks slash panic slash, oh my gosh, I want to like hide.
Yeah.
Because some people are like that, and it's mm-hmm. not just with the subject of HIV, but with any kind type of, you know, disease that might be stigmatized.
Yeah.
That's the word I was looking for.
Stigmatized.
Sorry, I get tongue twisted sometimes. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Anytime. If you know, because I know you'll have, you know, some listeners that may email and say, hey, what about this? What about that? You know, or
oh, yeah.
questions, you can forward them on to me, and I'll shoot you back an answer, and, you know.
That was a hint to our listeners that if you have any questions, go ahead and send them to the inbox in my Instagram.
Yes.
And, you know, flood it up with questions or topics, like I've said, you know, related to this episode or not. I am completely open to other types of topics related to chronic disease or illness, as we have a wide variety when it comes to audience and disease, yeah. because chronic disease is pretty much everywhere.
It's broad.
Very broad, which is why I made this podcast, because I'm like, there's so many different things we could talk about.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
Me too.
Definitely, if you haven't followed us yet, go follow us on Instagram. I will provide the information in the episode description. So go ahead and follow, like our stuff, comment on our stuff. I'm open to, you know, constructive criticism. It's late. It's like 10 o'clock in Indy, and it's been a long week.
Oh.
So for John and I both. But definitely, I want to hear from people. I haven't really heard from anybody just yet. And I do want to thank those who have been listening. I've been looking at the numbers go up and up on numbers of plays and downloads and etc. So keep them coming, because the more you guys like and listen, the more that just drives me to continue this podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening to episode 2. Episode 3 should be coming at you next week. And stay tuned for the topic. I'll try to every week kind of drop subtle little clues as to what the next week's topic's going to be. So stick around, and we'll catch you next week. Bye!